in school. She's done in school, and this would have taken half an hour out of class time. So the resident educator over there and said, he cannot understand how you can take away half an hour in order to organize that. I said to him, I agree with you 100%. You cannot understand it. That was my answer. Is it clear? So, which means the fact that you cannot understand does not change facts. Now, we have to, it's not a question of being humble. It's a question of being logical. It's a question of knowing facts. Do you know, there is such a thing like the pie. Huh?
Pie?
Yeah. Oh, you're like, excuse me, I talk in Pesach about a pie. It's chametz there. Do you know that there is, pie means there is, we cannot, in our capacity, we cannot find the exact relation between the circumference of a circle, huh, and the diameter. You know that? Huh? And I am not insulted. I am telling me that I can't understand it. We know that our mind is limited. So we, if I am told that there is something which is not within my capacity, I take it. As a matter of fact, this is relative. A child in kindergarten would ask you a question, and you are not able to answer, not because you don't have the answer, but because he is not mature enough yet to grasp the answer, right? Then, when it comes into, let's say, to junior high, and he asks you a question, if he would ask you the kindergarten question, he has the answer himself, it doesn't need you. Huh? But then he asks you a question of higher mathematics. You don't answer. It's not because there is no answer, because he's not ready for it. So this is a progression that goes higher, 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 higher. And we say that in the highest capacity, highest human capacity, is not reaching all over. No. And I think if I don't know this, I am fooling myself. So, this is a question that you ask, which Hillel the Rambam said this is out of our. All right. So I will do something. He asked me a question which I did not answer. So all I did, I spent 5 minutes to explain that I don't know it. Are you done? Now, are there any other questions? The principle of free will, how does this go together with the fact that Hashem knows ahead? Those are two fields we don't touch each other. But I don't know the answer. Yes.
We Jews have a very long history. We Jews have a very long history.
Right.
And in much of that history, we've suffered a great deal. And in a way, it seems that our destiny is one of, if not our history, is one of suffering. I mean, is it justifiable to remain Jewish in view of what seems to be a historical pattern that continues time after time?
So, what would be the alternative? Huh? No, there are two kinds of a question. Sometimes somebody asks an advice. I have a question, advice. So he has an alternative, and he asks, should I take the alternative? Sometimes if you don't have an alternative, the question is not what should I do, but the question is why. So that's why I ask you, do you have an alternative?
I haven't thought about it.
Huh?
I haven't thought about it.
Sure, you can intermarry.
Yeah.
And then, no, you're an exhaustion.
What would you add to it? He says it's not convenient to be a Jew. It's a statement. It is not convenient. Yeah. Now the question is there an alternative or not? Yeah, I'll tell you. Hitler demonstrated that there is no alternative. Why? Because Hitler, among assimilated Jews, he dug out up to the fourth generation. Great grandson of a Jew was good enough for him to treat him as a Jew with oak wilt. So can we run away from it? I don't know what would happen to the fifth generation, but up to four generations he did it. So, and the German Jewish community had a big, big section of totally reformed and integrated Jews into the German society. Fully assimilated, didn't help them. So it seems that we don't have an alternative. If we don't have an alternative, let's find out if we are paying a price. Why do we pay that price? Maybe we are getting something which is very valuable. There is no escape from being a Jew. Once a person is born a Jew, he cannot take off that tag. This has been proven more than once in history. So then, but it seems we pay a price for being Jewish. We pay a price, let's find out what are we getting for it. There is a story with a man by the name of Professor Hafkin. Professor Hafkin was a Russian Jew who became very famous by inventing an anti-cholera serum. Remember?
Anti-cholera serum.
Yeah. He went, at that time, India was plagued by him. It was at the beginning of the century, before the First World War. He went to India, and he became the hero of the country. As a matter of fact, I have seen Indian mail stamps with a picture of Hafkin. Now, that man, a Russian Jew, has established a foundation for yeshivas, the Hafkin Estate. And that Hafkin Estate continued. It was handled by a group in Berlin, and it continued until 1938. I remember I used to come to Vilna. Vilna was the center of the Lithuanian yeshivas. So we knew in Vilna. No, it was a bad yeshiva, but also an office of all yeshivas. I remember the schedule, they had a schedule in their budget when they received the annual payments from that foundation. It was a big one. And he supported all yeshivas in Lithuania, in Poland, and Hungary. And I was always wondering what happens, a Russian man, a doctor in India, and that was the only big foundation for yeshivas. Usually for yeshivas are living from small contributions. And I was wondering, what is it? Later, I happened to read a letter which was reprinted, right, what he wrote. He says, he tells his biography. He was born into an assimilated Jewish family in Russia, in near Odessa. And he decided that he wants to go, he made school, I don't know, I made school, it was not easy for a Jew to go into a major at that time. He made school, and he decided he wants to go into medical school. Medical school, he went to Switzerland. In Russia, a Jew couldn't go to university. So he went to Switzerland, and after he graduated in Switzerland, he went to Paris and he joined the Pasteur Institute. You know that. Later, he was already famous as a researchman. The University of Edessa wanted him as a professor. So they offered him a professor. But he's a Jew. He's a Jew, so they offered him unconditioned that he converts. That he converts to, it was the Greek Orthodox Church at that time. And this was not unusual. There have been many Jews in Russia who wanted to get to high positions. They converted. There was a Professor Hvolson who was the librarian of the Tsar's library. He converted. So, writes Hafkin, when they told me that he should give away being a Jew in order to get that job, he says, I said to myself, before I give it away, he said, let me find out what is it I'm going to give away. So he started studying it. Huh? That's a fact. So, if we think that we pay a too high a price, we have to try to figure out what is it. What do we have? And it seems that what we are getting is not bad. Now, imagine where could he have a seder bed like I had this year. Here's a story. I don't know whether you know the fellow. He's a South African fellow. He learned in the Mir. Where did he learn here?
Yeah.
In Mir, right. But he is I don't know how to describe you. The man is in love with people. Just in love with people. He married 12 weeks ago. Huh? I don't think so. I don't tell me. He comes in to me before Pesach. He begs me I should come to his Seder. No, I was so organized. And he begs me, I can't describe to you how much he begged me to come. And I just couldn't make up my mind. On one hand, I have all set and I would start anew. It's like a revolution. And on the other hand, the man is asking. So it's just a pity. It was a pity on him. So I told him, I'll tell you tomorrow. And overnight, I didn't know how to make up my mind. And in the morning, Mrs. Wasserman tells me, a person is begging you that much. She can't say no. So I picked up the telephone and I said, I'm coming. And I still didn't know what was going on. But he told me that he has a Seder of 15 people. A new event has a Seder of 15 people. The end was about 25 people. And the feeling of people to each other, the friend and the warmth of people, was such an experience that I am so grateful to that fellow who forced me to come. Huh? You're a witness, right? You know that. Now, I don't know if not for being Jewish, whether you can have that kind of a pleasure. You know that. That warmth for people, and that warmth for people because you want people to be happy. Not because of, it's not selfish. You feel it. You can sense it. It's not selfish. And it's such a pleasure and such a joy. Where I live, in Mattersdorf, I live 8 years already over there. Children are playing constantly, full of children. I haven't seen a fight in 8 years. And I have seen the children happy, helping each other, enjoying each other. And it tells me what's going on in the homes. Because a child is like an immigrant, come to a new country, and he makes his observations, and then he adapts the customs. Okay. Now, if the parents are unhappy with each other, if parents are nagging each other, if parents have... So the child knows that in this country, people nag. In that country, people are angry. In that country, people are sad. Now, if you see children always happy, most probably their homes are happy homes. And imagine for 8 years, I keep on saying the same thing. I don't have to go into the homes. I look at the children and I know what's going on, what the mood of the home. Give me any other community but a Torah community which has this. We are getting something for it. The only thing is, we are not free to go out of the deal. The deal is there. You pay for being a Jew, and it's within your ability to take the full benefit of being a Jew, and the benefits are plenty. The pity is people who pay the price and don't collect the merchandise. That's a pity.
They haven't done any window shops.
Huh?
They haven't done any shopping. They haven't seen.
Right? Right. Right. But now, your question brings us to Agudah. Your question brings us to the Agudah. The Agudah which was said in the Seder. And this is why the Agudah is so important. Because it tells us the place of the Jewish people. And in the Agudah, there is one part, which is the main part of the Agudah. Is a short history of the Jewish people from its beginning until they're coming into the land of Israel, first time. And that short history is in Chumash, and it is in Chumash concerning another command, another mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of Bikurim. Bikurim means first ripening fruit. farmer in his farm, or he has an orchard, he has a field. And the first, as soon as the first ripening fruit appears, he has to pick out some, and prepare them to take to Jerusalem, to take to the Beis HaMikdash, the temple. The Torah says, don't go, put them in a nice basket. And the Mishnah is described the procession of the farmers with their baskets going to the Beis HaMikdash. It's a beautiful procession. Now when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, which a basket of first ripening fruits, whether it's fruit, whether it's vegetables, what's ripening? Not vegetables, but grains, fruit and grains. He should enter the Beis HaMikdash, the courtyard, not the courtyard. A Kohen should go with him. And he comes close to the Mizbeach. He and together with the Kohen lift up that basket. And while it's raised, that farmer has to make a statement. And the statement is, my Lord, I proclaim that I came to the land that you promised us to come. And here is the first ripening. And then he should go through, in short, the history from Yaakov going to Laban, when Yaakov went to his father-in-law, and then Yaakov coming to Egypt, and then coming out of Egypt. All this is in four short sentences. And the Haggadah, you say those four sentences with their explanation. So the Haggadah quotes a pasuk from the Bikurim, from the plan. And right away the Haggadah analyzes each and every word and gives you the meaning of each and every word. And this is the main book of the Haggadah. But all this is introduced in the Haggadah with a quotation of the Bris Ben Absorim. I don't know, you call them the covenant between the pieces. You know what it is? When Avraham was promised that his children will have the land of Eretz Israel, Avraham says to Hashem, I would like to know how I'll get. Which way will I come down? So Hashem tells him, you should know that your children will be strangers in a land that doesn't belong to them. They will be slaved, they will be tortured. But later they will come out with a great wealth. The great wealth doesn't have to mean a physical wealth. It may mean a spiritual, an ethical wealth. But you come out. Now, the Haggadah says, this is what was going on later. And then the Haggadah makes one paragraph, the Hishondo. You remember the Hishondo? People are singing it, the Hishondo, the Hishondo. So, yeah, I was about the Hishondo, you remember? And what does it say over there? And this, the previous quotation is which, and the promise by Hashem, which is Melvah quotation, which has stood up for us all the time. In each and every generation, we have enemies who want to destroy us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu rescues us. And that's the... So what's so good about it? That in each and every generation we have people who want to destroy us, and Hashem rescues us. It would be better when David would need somebody to rescue us. Well, what's good about it? It says in Chumash that when Yaakov was going to settle in Egypt, on the way he had a prophecy, and he's addressed by Hashem and tells him, do not fear to go down to Egypt. So the Sforno, it's a classic commentary, says, what did he fear? He says, Yaakov was a prophet, and he saw already all the inconveniences which were in Egypt. And he was afraid. So Hashem told him, don't be afraid. Let me say something else in the meantime. The Haggadah, most probably, is expecting us to express gratitude to Hashem for taking out the people from Egypt. Isn't it? Huh? And I would question the gratitude. A fellow meets me in the street, beats me up, throws me into jail. After 3 days, he comes and takes me out. Well, I thank him for taking me out from jail. Who asked him to throw me in prison? I thank Hashem for taking me out from Egypt. Why did he throw me in? It's a good question, right? Come this fun and says that Yaakov was afraid, for the same reason he was afraid to go. And Hashem told him, don't be afraid. It has a function, it has a purpose. He says, your family will finally have to become a nation. And to become a nation, it has to be cemented together. And what keeps us as a nation? Torah keeps us as a nation. But Torah was not given to a family and not to individual. Torah was given already to a nation. So they had to become a nation previous to. What will make you a nation? So the other thing which will make you a nation is persecution. Because of your enemies, you'll get together and you'll stick together and you'll become one unit. He says, now when you'll sit in Canaan, where you're equal citizens with everyone, you'll never become a nation. You better go down to Egypt, where it says that the Egyptians cannot sit at the same table, the same dining table with the Hebrews. That's when, this is when you'll get your identity. So therefore, it's not without a function, it's not without a purpose. It is a purpose. The Jewish people have a great function. The function of the Jewish people is when the human being was created, Avraham and Chumash, Adam and Chava committed a big mistake. And they reduced the entire human race to a misbehaving race. And the only thing which remained to make the business of this world worthwhile is that there should be at least one branch which should strive to perfection, which should strive to ethical perfection. And Abraham was picked out to be the father of that race. It says in Rambam why. Rambam explains why was Abraham picked out. It says Abraham was one man in an entire human race of idol worshippers. Now, what's an idol worshipper? You know what this? You know, the Olympus has so many gods. You know, among all the gods in the Olympus, you don't find a god who's able to walk. You know that? Huh? There's a god for revenge, there is a god for love. What's the meaning? When we have so many fellows over there, and not one, to say who created the world. You know why? It's a very simple thing. Imagine a fellow walks into a department store, a big department store, and he sees over there a camera, a video, nice video. He likes it. How much is it? $1,500. Too much for him to spend. But he wants a video. So he calls over the clerk and says, listen, I'll give you $100, steal it for me. We'll get a video for $100. Now that fellow doesn't care who is the boss. All he wants to get the goods, right? Now imagine a fellow goes into a department store and that's his way, the only one. So he goes to each and every counter and finds out how to bribe the clerk. And then he'll get his goods. He'll buy them this, he'll buy them this. That's the Olympus. The fellow who goes in, he doesn't care who it is. He wants the goods. He wants to be successful in love. And the other fellow wants to be successful in revenging his people. And the third one wants to become a multimillionaire. And this one wants to become a superman. So, they imagine that those old fellows, each one is at the counter. So they learn how to bribe him and get it. That's what tail worshiping is. As a matter of fact, that's even what the general concept of religion is. I once picked up at the plane ride by the Continental Airlines. Anyone knows Continental Airlines in the West? So they gave me my meal, my kosher meal, and on the plate they have a little card, and that card, I don't know what to say, grace for the meal or something. Have you ever seen this? You've seen those cards? Good. So I have a witness for you. Huh? So that card has three formulas. What a Catholic should say, what a Protestant should say, what a Jew should say. Now both the Catholic and the Protestant say, God, please bless my bread. The Jew says, God, I thank you for giving me that bread. There is a difference. There is a difference. All he is concerned, all he needs God is to give him a blessing for his bread. And really, he has salt and pepper on the table. Why shouldn't he have God's blessing on the table? Huh? He creates a God to serve him. He's not serving God. The Jew, at least, and that card, and I can imagine that some Reform rabbi has translated, there's a little benching for small children, which is a sentence, but almost that sentence, which says, I thank the Lord, the master of all the world, for giving you that bread. So, but I'm not a taker. I am grateful for receiving something, for giving me something. But the Christian religion doesn't want. The Christian religion is a God has to supply them. He has, especially they invited a God who will forgive them. So it's not far away from idol worship. Now comes one man and says, Before I'm getting the good, let me find out who is the boss. This was Avraham. An entire world of takers. Comes one man and says, who is the boss? Yes.
What about people like Shem and Ever?
Like who?
Shem. No, Shem ben Noah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ever.
Fine. Yeah, I'll tell you. The Rambam says it. Shem and Ever had a school. You know that. The difference between Shem and Ever and Avraham was that Shem and Ever did not canvass. If somebody wants to come to the school, they came, but didn't go out to canvass. And he goes around a man and goes around teaching people, doing everything in order to teach people, to get people to listen to him. And the one who carried the message of Hashem in this world was Avraham, not Shem. So the Rambam says that for this activity of Avraham, he was promised a surviving descendants, that the Jewish people will always survive. But this Avraham who came up with a message, he introduced a very simple sport. Now he was selected that his children will live up to an ethical level high enough to justify the running of the entire business. Is it clear? Huh? It's the same as in a business. Not every department is profits, brings profits. A department which keeps on investing in advertising and all kinds of things. But as long as there is a sales department, then it makes worth everything. So that department of the creation which should justify the rest of other departments is supposed to be the Jewish people. And it's possible that one man, we cannot imagine how valuable is one correct person. The only thing is that we have the privilege of the ability that each one of us should become that one. And that's what, when the Torah was given, and it says, "Ratam tiyalim amlechas ka'ani v'gei kodesh," you should become to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And we have to survive. And survival, says the Sipronoi, is either Torah or persecution, which keeps us together, which stopped us from disintegrating. And before the Torah was given, it was a necessity to cement the people together through that Egyptian experience. Later it's not a necessity, but sometimes it becomes. Says that in each and every generation, there are people who want to destroy us. And those people are the ones who achieve the fact that we don't assimilate, that we don't disintegrate. But should they have their way, it would be very bad. So Hashem stops them in the middle. So what keeps us alive is that play, the combination. They want to destroy us and Hashem doesn't let them. That keeps us alive. That's what they are good at. It doesn't mean that it makes me happy as an individual. It doesn't mean that it makes happy the people who are in the concentration camp. This is another question, which I don't think we know how to answer. I'll tell you, you sing it before benching in Shira Malad, Shiva Hashem and Shiva Tzion, right? Huh? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring back his people to Zion. Again, we will realize that it was a bad dream. Somebody wakes up He had a bad dream. But I realized it was a dream. He says, the entire history that we went through, we realized at that time that it was just a bad dream. I want to understand it. There is, first we have to understand that a people and the Jewish people, we have to look at it as a corporation. A corporation, let's say a city is issuing bonds. Bonds to be paid in 75 years. It's normal. Now the people who are going to pay for those bonds are not the people who really benefited. Maybe yes, maybe they build roads and the roads are still there. But here, one generation borrowed and another generation pays. Is it fair? I hear my question. Is this fair? So I'll tell you a story. I had a friend in Detroit. He's not alive anymore. Moshe Zakolovashev. He was a great industrialist. He didn't know well English, but he was a good businessman. So after the war, he purchased surplus. Among the surplus, he purchased a lot of broken tanks. And there is a certain boat with the arm, which is very valuable. So he purchased tanks. The purchase cost him $250,000 right after. And then he put people to take apart the junk and pick out the boat, and he made many millions of dollars. Some people in Washington became jealous. They had such, and that you took it away. They had a treasure. So they started giving him trouble with deliveries. So he told me the story himself. He said he had to take the government to court. Now he decided he'll take President Truman to court. He said, well, sir, secretary, each one sits in another. So he takes the head. So he sued Truman and the government. At court, a lawyer for the government claims that the people who signed the contract are not more in the office, and they don't feel obligated to live up to the contract. So he says, I said to my lawyer, I want to answer. He walks over to the judge, pulls out a dollar bill from his pocket and says, Your Honor, your government is circulating illegal money. He says, why? So take a look, we signed on that, yeah, that dollar bill. He won his case. Which means, how do you win his case? A corporation is not tied to the individual. The corporation goes on. The individual signs for the corporation. The same is with a nation. It says in Chumash that Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu. No, Moshe Rabbeinu says it. He says, I know that soon after my passing away, you will misbehave. By the end of your history, you will be met half with your punishment. Means another generation is paying. And we don't know, maybe that's what happened during the Holocaust. We don't know. That's a corporate concept. You found this. Now, as a corporation, I can understand that it may have been a bad dream, not more. Why? Because what the nation will gain later out of it may make us realize that it was just a dream, as a nation. But as the individual who suffered in the camp, for him it's not a dream.
Now, Pasuk in Kitate, it says, if I will not die for sons, and the son will not die for his father's each
generation. I didn't understand, please.
Now, Pasuk in Kitate.
states it. It says, a father will not die for his son's sins. A son will not die for his father's sins. Each man dies for his own sins.
This has to do with individual. That's the individual. But as a nation, national debts, we are responsible. A son doesn't pay for what his father borrowed. And that's the halacha in we were in our law, that later the children should pay for them. But in the natura, a child was not legally, you couldn't claim him to pay debts on your father, unless the father left real estate and the real estate was mortgaged. The son, on the other hand, has an ethical obligation to pay, but not a legal obligation. But this is a son and a father, but this has nothing to do with a corporate obligation of the entire nation, of the nation. And each one of us is both an individual and part of the nation. Now, is it clear? But I say that statement of Aginu Kholman, that statement that it was like a dream from a national aspect, I can understand it. But the individual in the camp, for him it was not a dream. I knew what I said. And the only thing is that if we realize, and this Agoy said, that if we realize, he said it not, it was said by Immanuel Kant. When did he live? He lived in the 19th century, I think.
What that wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
He's a Renaissance philosopher. Mm-hmm. Like 1600, didn't he?
When? 16? No. It was later. Either in the 18th or the 19th century. So, but he said that, he made that statement. He says that everything in nature is very logical. The only thing which is not logical is that right people suffer. He says the only explanation could be that the life here is not the end of it. It continues. And that is where all those accounts are being regulated. He says it. So, but I don't need Kant to say it. We know that there is Eilam Hazo and that the survival of the soul and that the personality is really the soul, and we look at our body as a cover, as a garment. Oh, and it's very hard, but in addition, I'll tell you something else. In Mishaya, it's one of the last prophets, he tells us that after Mashiach will come, there will be a great sadness in Jerusalem. And people will cry. And families will get together and cry what was lost in their family. And the question is, when Mashiach will come, should be a happy time. Why should people cry at that time? And the answer is, it says in the Cheskel that he says, I will remove your heart of stone and will replace it with the heart of flesh. Which means, he says, you are not sensitive, you have a heart which is not sensitive enough, and I will give you a sensitive heart. It has a purpose. Because if we would have sensitive hearts, we couldn't exist. Especially, my generation was around when all this happened. We would not be able to exist. In order that we should be able to build and to rebuild, we are provided with a heart of stone. But now, when Mashiach will come, and by that time everything will be built up, And not only this, by that time, we may understand the purpose of all this. We may have answers. We would not lose our minds even when we have a heart of flesh. Then we'll become sensitive. That's when we'll start crying. That's my only excuse for myself, for not losing my mind. Are you still fishing?
Why don't you explain that part again?
Huh?
Could you explain that part again?
Which part?
The heart of flesh, the heart of stone.
Yeah. Heart of stone means insensitivity. Heart of flesh means sensitivity. So we are told that our sin provides us with non-sensitive hearts, because if we would be sensitive enough, the tragedies which we have seen would drive us crazy. We wouldn't be able to exist. We wouldn't be able to do anything. And it says in Chumash, when Esau will come to one Jewish camp and destroy it, the remainder Jewish camp is here in order to rebuild the nation again. So that's our function, to rebuild. And Hashem is rebuilding with us. But if we would be really sensitive, what happened? We would be of no use for anything. Yes.
Doesn't that same type of heart cause people not to see the truth of Hashem? In other words, the people as a result of having a stone heart, have a built-in insensitivity.
Yeah.
So as a byproduct of that built-in sensitivity, if they would really take a look at the world,
yeah.
In other words, the world would be so clear that there was a God. The same stone heart that stops you from saying God, I mean, is it?
Maybe, and maybe it's even without a stone heart in heaven, because the influence of our interest is has a great power in influencing our minds, in influencing our thinking. You know that? It's very interesting. In Gemara, a case, somebody learned Bar Metzia in the beginning? What? So, the Gemara says in the case, when the Gemara says there are two cases, cases they found something, and cases they purchased something. And here is a fellow, did you land it? Huh?
Today.
And here is a fellow, he comes and claims I purchased it. Who purchased it? I purchased it. Or he picked up, and I come and say, I picked it up. Remember? So the Gemara says that the case of Metzia, the case of a found article, he says that is rationalization. He says the man, the wrong fellow, says to himself, did it cost him anything? He picked up. It didn't cost him anything. So he has something he found. So let me claim that I found it. And then I'll end up with getting ahead. I'm doing nothing wrong. It doesn't cost him anything. He's not losing anything. But in Gemara it says, Mori hatero lenafshi. He finds an excuse for himself. Huh? Why for himself? Because if that fellow, if I would see somebody picked up something, and I think it's good, and maybe I'll claim that I picked it up and I'll get there. And I'll ask him, well, would you advise me, should I do it? And I would say, he didn't lose anything. Should I grab or not? He would say, don't grab. If I want to grab, I accept as the rationalization. Maybe nobody rationalizes for somebody else. Everybody rationalizes for himself. Is that clear? Huh? And this is a tremendous influence on our thinking. And we think we're right. So, this is also with that stupidity. That stupidity. Who cares? Is there a boy or no boy? In the meantime, I'll go to the camp and somebody will give me the goods. Definitely, it's illogic, it's ontologic. But everyone for himself is ontologic. So I don't have to go to the stony heart for this. So, and I remain with questions. As I said, nationally, I can understand that from a national aspect. But from the individual's aspect, I definitely don't understand. And even nationally, it's very hard to understand. We paid with 6 million people, with 2 million small children. What are we getting from it? We haven't gotten yet. Well, but what can we get for it that it's worth just a price? We can't understand it. We cannot understand. But it says, also in the sciences, at that day, you will say, I thank you, Hashem, for having been angry at me. When your anger will go away, I'll find my consolation. Means that when this will come to an end, we'll find out the purpose and we'll know why we paid that price. You know? You know the book about my father's hand in water?
Yeah.
At the very end, there is a section which is called Testament from the Grave, or Ernest story. Right after the war, I was in New York, comes in a fellow. He was a former student of Yeshiva Chaim Berlin. Comes in, tells me he was in the army. He was an officer in the intelligence. There was also a story. The government was not intending to take Yeshiva into the army. They didn't take clerical students in the army, clerical students. But there was a man in the head of the office, of the registration office in New York, who did not like Yeshivas. And he tried to get, he said, By the end of the war, I said, there will be no yeshivas. Akos was his name. So, he could, huh?
Was it Jewish?
A Jew? Sure. So, but we survived. But there are a few Bochum. So here's one Bochum, me, a Birnbaum, from, with Richter in the army, and he became an officer in the intelligence. And he was at the day of the liberation. So right away he went to the camps. And he organized them right away. They should have food and stuff. So he meets a young man who comes from Korna. The Korna is my father's friend. That's where he was killed. And he says to him, did you hear of Rabbi Chaim? He says, I heard him say Asir and Yeshiva. My father was in So he came one day in primary session. She said, I'll tell you, I'll repeat to you an address which he addressed the Jews in the ghetto, in the corner ghetto. And this is strengthened in that. Yeah. And he tells him the story. He says, imagine a man comes into a farmer and he says, I would like to learn farming. And the farmer says, fine, stay with me and you'll go with me and you'll do some observations. One day he calls him and says, I'm going to the farmer. He comes. The man takes some tools and he plows the ground. He doesn't know what it is. He says, you take such a nice piece of land and you make such a mess out of it. What are you doing? So the farmer says, wait. A few days later, he calls him again. He goes out with a big bag of seed and goes and throws the seed and then covers them up. He says, such nice seed. Did you bury this? What is it? Why are you burying the seed? He says, wait. For a couple of months, that's fine. Then he called him and said, let's go. He goes and he sees the field is full of grain, beautiful grain. Oh, he says, now I know really what you did. The man takes a sickle and starts cutting. He says, what are you doing? You have such a thing. What are you doing? Wait. Then they get them together and makes nice piles. Silent. Really? So he put it, takes, and then it comes to threshing. He takes and beats it. He says, well, what are you beating this? Why are you? He says, wait. And then he gets the grain out and he piles up the grain, nice piles. He says, maybe this is. Suddenly he comes one day, he takes those, takes them to the mill and starts grinding them. He says, what are you doing? You have such nice things. And you make, what do you make? Dust out of them. Later they take that dust, mix it with water. So when they're making mud, says, wait. After this is conception, he says, and then suddenly he makes nice loaves of bread. Maybe. He heats up a furnace and takes those loaves and throws them in the fire. So what are you doing? He says, wait. He says, only the person who will survive to find the bread taken out from you, he will have an answer for all this. Before you see that end, you have no answer. You know that? So I have printed it in that. But this is. But we are compensated with a lot of joy of life. That's Seder. Such a joy of life. Not an enemy. You went to the Seder. You came the next morning, right? Next morning, the same. You were there when that couple came in later. And they gave them a serenade, huh? The beauty of people enjoying, seeing other people enjoying, the joy, only we can have it. Right. And the great men. Great personalities. A Jewish personality, a great personality, the Rambam says it again. The Rambam says, the purpose of the entire creation which we see is to produce one man perfect intellectually and ethically. And then it says, if somebody is perfect ethically and intellectually doesn't match it, he's a fine man, but he is not, he's imperfect. On the other hand, a person who is perfect intellectually and is behind ethically, his intellect is valueless. That's what the Rambam said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why? Because the Rambam understands what a laboratory does. A laboratory is all it's the tendency of the laboratory is to exploit the creation. But man was here not to exploit the creation, to serve the creation. Therefore, if your research is only what can I get out of it? How can I handle it? Technology, how can I handle it? How will I get another? And you don't care what for it, and you don't care what obligation you have to it. You are not serving the creation. You are consuming it. But and the human being was created to be a producer. And as part of it, he has to be a consumer too. But not to be a consumer, a producer. The law, a gambler is disqualified as a witness in Jewish court. Rabbi Yehuda says, only the gambler whose trade is gambling. But an occasional gambler, he accepts it. Why? Because if your trade is gambling, you are a consumer and not a producer. And a person who is a consumer, his character is not developed right. It's living the normal life of giving and taking that a person is placed in, at least he is a normal place in society. Now, but the laboratory is a taker alone. They produce for me, but the relation to the universe is just exploited. And our relation to the universe should be to serve it. Yes.
Are you basically saying then it's best for us to work on our ethical character more so than emphasize study of Talmud and Torah?
No, I didn't say it. The more we'll study Talmud and Torah, the better we'll become ethical. But Rabbi Shaul Salanter came and said, we don't have enough. Our Torah is not enough. It's we have, it doesn't give us enough normal food. We have to take a supplement. And that supplement is Moshach. He says, it's not enough to cover all our ethical deficiencies. Because we are not learning enough. Therefore, take a supplement, a capsule. But our normal food, a person who lives on capsules alone, it's a rahman. That's a big thing. We have to have normal food is learning. Yes, sir.
You said that we have yet to see what we will receive in return for 1.5 million children being killed? Is that those?
What did they say?
Did I understand you correctly to say that we have yet to understand what we will receive as a result of 1.5 million children being killed, what we will receive in return?
It's not a question what we will receive. It's a question what will the nation reach? And most probably, it will. It will after Mashiach will come, but it will. It was not thrown out. But it's such a price that we cannot imagine. It's overwhelming to imagine for us what could be what it was worth to pay such a price. That's what I said.
Do we have a right to expect anything?
Huh? It's not a question of our expecting. Let me tell you, it's very interesting. There are two books in Tanakh which deal with questions, why are people unhappy? Kohelet and Iyov, Job. But what is interesting, Iyov has, as long as he was in a good position, he was wealthy, he had a nice family, he had nachas, he didn't question anything. When he started having trouble, he started questioning. Kohelet was written by King Solomon. King Solomon had all the comforts in the world. And he asked why people suffer. He didn't ask why I suffer, he asked why people suffer. Iyov, the Gemara says, "May Omasoy Ramayo." Iyov was an angel. So he doesn't care whether he wants to know why he suffers. And he suffers is questioning the entire world. It's a question whether we're talking to ourselves or we're talking to whether it's right or wrong, whether it's correct or it's not correct. It's a different question. It's not a subject question. It's an objective question. The question is, Hashem wouldn't make us pay such a price unless it should bring something. And we cannot imagine after such a terrible price, we have no imagination to figure out what could be what's made it worthwhile. Well, there's nothing Hashem makes which is not what we don't know it. My old story, Tom. I agree 100%, you don't understand.
I still don't understand. What do you mean about the flesh?
Yeah.
You know, there's a trouble with him.
Yeah.
He's a vegetarian. So you say, have a flesh, you don't know what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah. When will we have a heart of flesh?
Oh, it's after Mashiach will come.
And then
we'll realize the tragedies. And then we'll start crying. But then we will understand. Yes, a good Yom Kippur. Good night.